Before we get into today's show, I wanted to give a quick update. First is that we will be moving to a weekly release schedule. You can expect to see the show every Thursday in your feed. We will still be on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Just search for UNH Law. Second, and most exciting for me, is we'll now be filming the podcast for our fans on Facebook and YouTube, as well as LinkedIn. Our hopes is that we can more easily spread the show, make it easier to tune in. We'd love to see your comments regarding this update. In light of recent statements from Acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, Professor Buescher joins me to discuss the influence of politics in foreign policy. This is the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about the law school and apply by visiting law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, Buzz, Mick Mulvaney said he didn't have a, quote, perfect press conference, end quote, last week, when he basically said that the quid pro quo with Ukraine and President Trump regarding Biden is fine, ultimately, if it is the case. Which brings up a can of worms regarding the impact of politics in foreign policy.
It does. It brings up many cans of worms.
Yes.
As a matter of fact. So a little background to frame this. You know, the president has wide discretion in foreign policy. The Constitution makes it pretty clear by giving Congress, you know, the right to declare war or not to declare war, that power, but pretty much little else other than the control over money, that is, funding foreign policy or not funding foreign policy. But short of that, and approving ambassadors and not approving ambassadors. But short of that, it's traditionally and probably correctly, the president has had a lot of discretion in the area of foreign policy. So that's one of the starting points. The constitutional structure gives the president a lot of discretion. Number two, politics is a part of foreign policy. Politics is, the word politics is derivative of the word policy. You know, it's the art of policy making in many ways. That's what politics is. So, yes, politics is always a part of foreign policy in that many times when the president or the secretary of state are setting foreign policy goals, they're considering various political interests that push one in one direction or another direction in the exercise of authority in the foreign policy arena. You know, do we want to cozy up to the Soviet Union or Russia? Do we want to, you know, those are all, what is our relationship? What do we want our relationship to be with, you know, the dictator in North Korea? You know, those are all policy questions. And there are a variety of opinions across the political spectrum that, you know, often cross bipartisan lines and often are very polarized. So, yeah, in that sense, if politics is the art of policymaking, it is always a part of foreign policy when the fundamental goal is the best interests of the United States.
Right.
The problem with the Ukraine situation is that there seems to be increasing clarity in some fashion or another, particularly recently given what Acting Chief of Staff Mulvaney said, that there was a quid pro quo. If you, in Mulvaney's characterization, we withheld the military aid until in order to encourage them to force them to investigate whether the server with emails on it was actually in Ukraine, which is a, you know, put aside the fact that's a totally discredited conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. But that's not a policy debate over what's in the best interest of the United States.
Right. It's not economics. It's not where a border of some country should be. It's
I want to go after the Democrats to help me get reelected. And the same thing is true with the effort to try and get the newly elected president of the Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden and his son, Hunter Biden, of which there's no evidence they did anything wrong at least that anybody has been able to develop yet. Yeah. That was for a personal political benefit. It right. isn't for a foreign policy making benefit. Yeah. And therein lies the difference. So when he said he's trying to lump together foreign policy for the purpose of political, personal political advantage, with foreign policy being made in the national interest. And he, you know, his take home quote was, get over it, in terms of politics being part of foreign policy.
As he is wont to do.
Right.
Now, I mean, I know this is very specific with regards to the email server in this situation.
Yep.
Now, say in theory, big in theory with this, it was just over the what happened with the 2016 election, where there was meddling going on with Russians. There's some fingers from certain Ukrainian assets that were involved with it. Say it was just being involved with that end of it. Would it have been such a controversy?
Yes and no. Yes, it would, because all the intelligence agencies, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, they banded together and did an exhaustive investigation of this back after the election, and they issued a comprehensive report as to what they could say with pretty strong confidence actually happened. So part of what this is less about investigating what actually happened. It's more about unwinding the work that's already been done. So the only reason you would have to unwind the work that's been done by the agencies who are the best able to do it and who have the resources to do it and the skill to do it is for a political reason. So, yeah, it would still be a controversy for that reason. No, in the sense that you described, if after the right after he was sworn into office, Trump said, let's get together the people with the most skill and ability to figure this out and figure out what really happened, and that's what this, you know, politics in foreign policy was about, that would have been completely appropriate. But that was done. He just didn't like the outcome.
Right. In this situation, it's the timing of it. Just we're getting close to the primaries. We're getting close to the next election. And Biden, if he somehow gets the Democratic nomination, is pretty widely believed to be a real strong contender.
Yeah, and you know, part of what's going on is that it is exactly what you say. It's the political the juxtaposition to the upcoming election. I don't think many people actually believe this was in the interest of just finding out what happened. You know, the other piece of it that is so that complicates it tremendously is it's not as if the State Department and the Justice Department is doing this. It's or the CIA or right. the NSA. It's like a rogue. Some people have called it a shadow State Department. It's Rudy Giuliani and his Russian operatives who may or may not have connection with the Ukrainian mob. It's being conducted in a way that is not necessarily people with the best skill set to do this in the best way, and that further calls it all into question. It makes it look like being done in the interest of domestic politics, political advantage, rather than being done in the interest of national policy.
Yeah, it seems like something you would ordinarily see with like a Ukraine or one of these other countries where they would have private operatives involved, as opposed to the president of the United States having his private attorney doing an investigation.
One of the things that many Eastern European countries that were formerly part of the Soviet Union, the Soviet bloc, have struggled with in the years since the fall of the Soviet Union is managing corruption.
Right.
And so there has been, you know, on the one hand, you get you know, arguably the two Ukrainian operatives working for Giuliani were also very well funded by a Ukrainian oligarch who is under indictment in the United States for some sort of financial shenanigans. And that's very difficult. You know, on the other hand, you know, that's why it's so easy to tar Hunter Biden or Joe Biden with the Ukraine and corruption label, because it's easy for everybody to believe, true or not. It's an optic that rests very easily with many Eastern European countries.
You want to talk politics. I mean, you don't want to get down in the weeds with some of these governments and the things they've done. I mean, this is getting a little political, but Glenn Beck had like a 3-hour video just explaining the craziness that is the Ukrainian government over the last decade. It's it's crazy.
It's and it's a function of them being what we call emerging economies and emerging democracies and not having the long history that we have been, you know, so remarkably blessed with in this country. 200 years of growing an economy as an island country, a huge island country, but as an island country with nice water boundaries, rather than a country in Europe, which for almost
World War II, for millennia,
the
USSR,
the lands of all of Europe have been, you know, the countries, the boundaries have been shifting for, you know, 1,000 years in one way or another. And it's a very different world. And we are a little bit condescending to, and we have been, and we're regarded that way in many Eastern European countries as, oh, you think you know best? Try operating in our universe.
Are there any historical examples that you can think of, like even within the last 50 years, that might even come close to this?
Yeah, there are many examples. In some ways, yes. There are many examples of the United States government and other mature European democracies and economies interfering in the electoral processes of more vulnerable countries, either to try and get rid of a dictator or to depose a democratically elected a government that is socialist or Marxist or communist. So there's been this kind, we've always had, you know, these circumstances where we're interfering, we, the United States, be it the CIA or other arms, formally or informally interfering in other countries' politics. We just happen to get all sorts of huffy over it when they're in interfering in our politics. It's a really interesting. So you're bothered by what's happening?
Especially those poor South American countries.
Right. Yeah, you know, and then it's legitimately the U.S. is getting a little bit of their comeuppance here in a in an unexpected way that, you know, standing on high and speaking from principle about Russian interference in our election, you know, is a little, in some ways, a little bit much, given all the interference we've done in other countries' elections. I mean, I understand it, and it really is a big threat, and we need to pay attention to it, and it's worth getting angry about and trying to do something about, but let's not get too high on our horse about it.
Thanks for listening to the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about us by visiting law.unh.edu or following UNH Law on social media. Be sure to comment and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. And now be sure to check out the video version of the show on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. See you next Thursday.